Welcome everyone to the Meander Valley Council meeting on Tuesday the 13th of April. Safety procedures, security procedures, which I have to read out but probably not quite so relevant for me at the moment. Evacuation details and information are located on the wall to my right. Well, they're still on the right of my screen, but a fair way away from where you guys are. In the unlikelihood of an emergency evacuation, an alarm will sound and evacuation wardens will assist with the evacuation. When directed, everyone will be required to exit in an orderly fashion through the front doors and go directly to the evacuation point, which is in the car park at the side of the town hall. Thanks for that. We're starting at 3 o'clock. We've got, I need to change screens. Thank you. Table of contents. So we've got who's present, apologies from Councillor Susie Bauer, Councillor Steph Cameron. We've no leave of absence in attendance. Those that are listed. I'll just go back to this other screen. Somebody like to move, somebody like to second that the minutes of the ordinary council meeting on Tuesday, the 9th of March, be received. Councillor Knott.
Me. I'll be prepared to move them with one change.
One change, Councillor Knott.
The change is on page 11.
Right.
In relation to...
Sorry, Frank, did you get that
wrong? On page 11.
Yeah, of the March minutes?
Yes.
Yeah, so just one moment while I get those up.
In relation to staff resignations, at the meeting, I asked a question about resignation to the general manager. He named two staff members, and you guys can go over. My fault. General manager named two staff members, Joe Oliver and Neil Gross, and they were on tape, recorded on tape at the 6 minute mark. And within the minutes, the names were not recorded. I'd ask if they'd be added.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The minutes aren't a verbatim record, and they relate to operational matters. As a courtesy to your question, Councillor, I answered that question on the day, and the privacy of the officers is more important, in my view.
Question with respect to the manager. It is, I would think, a point of record to have, if you spoke on the day to those people that were present and it's on tape, people are here, why would they not be in the minutes?
I've just answered that, Councillor.
Okay, so Councillor Knott has moved an amendment. Sorry, Councillor.
Move to second.
I'll second it.
Councillor Kelly, second it.
Thank you.
Put the votes. All those in favour of the amendment, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Can you repeat that? In terms of the amendment or...
Sorry, in terms of the motion that Councillor Knott has moved.
In terms of...
What motion have you moved, Councillor?
I just provided the question as far as the names were not in the... I thought they should be.
I think we're just voting on the minutes as they sit, right?
Perhaps if somebody who supports the recommendation that the minutes of the ordinary meeting of council held on Tuesday 9 March 2021 be received and confirmed. Is there anybody prepared to move that? Which of you? Councillor Kelly. Any seconder? Back to you,
right.
Chair. Apologies.
Okay. So we've got a motion sitting there from Councillor Kelly and Councillor King, correct? We had an amendment moved by Councillor Knott, correct? Didn't move an amendment. Just wanted the minutes corrected.
But to ask the question again, and
the
did not have to include it.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. I'll put the motion in. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And again? And against? Let me know when you've recorded those, Jackie.
Yes, thank you. That's 5-4 and Councillor Sinfield and not against.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, at this time, may we record in the minutes or note the death of this, sadly, of His Royal Highness Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh.
You can do that, I guess, unless you want to wait till the announcements by the councillors, Councillor Kelly, Councillor Temple. Okay, I'll take that as a motion from yourself then.
I'll second that.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Any discussion on the motion before it was put? No. I'll put that motion then as it stands. All those in favour, please say aye. Against?
Sheriff against. All others in favour. Councillor Johnston, what was your vote?
Yes, I did put my hand up in favour of that one, if you can see me. This is going to be a long day.
They're the same time as every other day. 24 hours.
Yep.
We've got no daylight saving.
Okay, council workshops held since last meeting. Jackie, you just have to let me know when you're right to go.
Yes, sorry.
No, you're right. So you've got the announcements by the mayor, announcements by other councillors. Declarations of interest. There was nil.
Nil.
Tabling your actions on petitions.
Nil.
Yeah. We're into public question time. Questions have been asked and responded to.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, there is one question we've noticed that fell through the cracks over the Easter period, and that's from Mr. Wildman, that I'll need to read into the record at some point.
Right. Okay. Is that now included in the minutes that we're looking at?
Yes, it is.
It is.
If you want to read, that'd be the time.
Thank you.
One moment, Mr. Mayor. Mr.
Wallman is in the gallery, and the general manager is just speaking with him.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, would you like me to read that, or take it as noted for the minutes?
That will depend on Mr. Wildman if he would like it to be read or taken it as read. It's being used in the gallery.
Take it as read, he indicates.
Mr. Wildman's happy to take it.
Thank you, Mr. Wildman. Thank you. Okay. No other public questions without notice from the gallery?
No indications.
None.
None. Thank you. Councillor, question time. Questions taken on notice, obviously, is there from Councillor Temple.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, just as another piece of housekeeping. Last meeting, Councillor Temple in question time requested that we provide an update on the climate change policy. My understanding through discussion with Council Temple is given consent for that to be rolled over to the main meeting.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so there's, excuse me, there's nil councillor questions with notice, councillor questions without notice. And my little screen's not up. Councillor, I'm sure Councillor Temple, there we go. No, Councillor Knott. Not.
Can the general manager advise of any staff resignation since the last member of council meeting on the 9th of March?
As I alluded to, council, their operational matters, and got the answer is no. It happened. No.
Second question. Would the general manager or director of planning advise of the council limit for the number of entrances in a cul-de-sac?
I'd like to take that on notice, councillor, to ensure the facts.
Any other councillor questions without notice? Yes. Councillor Temple?
Yeah,
can you use the microphone, John? Yep.
My usual question, Mr. Mayor, is there any update on any developments with the proposed prison, particularly, and taking to note the answers to the questions of the previous meeting that are within these minutes? If there's anything beyond that that should be noted?
Before you do, Jim, I was contacted by a Mr. Colin Shepherd, I think it was, before Easter, who is employed by the government to be looking at the site. I didn't really get the gist of what his title was. He was asking for a meeting with myself, which did not eventuate. So that is not, but he's, yes. So that's the only correspondence contact I've had, Councillor Temple, with anybody to do with the prison in the last month.
Previous Mayor, no contact. No contacts.
Okay, any other questions, councillors? It is no. Any deputations by members of the public?
No.
Okay. So I move on to planning authority items. So for the purpose of considering the following planning authority items, council is acting as a planning authority under the provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993. And we go then to planning authority one, which is 11 Sturgis Place, Prospect Vale.
Just bring the representatives in now, Chair.
Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just going to have to, for compliance with our code, ask the three people in the public gallery to exit for this item because we have seven representatives potentially. Take this over our limit, sorry.
Thanks, Jim.
This way. Just speak to the general manager outside. Thank you.
discovery from other lines beyond.
Shannon Crawford. I think we're ready, Mr. Mayor.
I know, General Manager. So, Planning Authority 1, 11 Sturgis Place. There are some representatives or some people to address Council, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. We've one substitute. Tim Fitzalan is substituted with Shannon Crawford.
Okay, so you have the list in front of you, and I'll ask those that are going to address council to let you know that you have 3 minutes to address council. It is not a debate. I'll get you to come forward, state your name and address, please, and I'll get the general manager to ask the first of those people to come forward. Thank you.
First one is Shannon Crawford. Adam Sutton.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Adam Sutton. I've lived in the Yandra Valley area for 25 years. I'm a volunteer organiser of one of the range top events. My club, my family, and I are long-term contributors to the Yandra Valley community. My wife and I own 13 Sturgis Place and plan to build there later this year. I thank the councillors and the mayor for the opportunity to speak today. Approval of the development relies on the performance criteria for the design and layout of car parking that does not meet any acceptable solutions. In the agenda for the meeting, the planner comments the ability to implement landscaping within the areas visible from the road is limited by the layout of the site. The area for landscaping is limited because the developer is trying to place two townhouses on the site. As such, development is inappropriate because it's unable to meet the performance requirements. A single dwelling on this lot would have extensive landscaping at the front and thus maintain the existing pleasant streetscape. Non-compliance with performance criteria because of the developer's poor design does not justify approval, especially given a single dwelling on this site would easily satisfy the performance criteria. I must stress the planner acknowledges the development does not meet the performance requirements if it recommends approval anyway. But it tries to justify the decision by saying 65 square metres of landscaping extending along the eastern boundary. This is correct, however, none of this landscaping is visible from the street. It's all behind the fence to the left and therefore does not contribute to any improvement of the streetscape. The design doesn't meet the performance requirements. The landscaping is barely more than 10% of the concrete area visible from the street. When you're using it, the site would be more akin to high-density city, not general residential light zone. Also, in reference to the planner's notes, central development is so inappropriate for the area that special mention is to be made about the location of bins for collection because there simply isn't enough room at the end of the street. For the Hatchman Heights development, senior strategic planner Joe Oliver requires a cul-de-sac with 7 accesses be removed, ensuring that no more than 4 from the access from the depth of the cul-de-sac. Sturgis Place has 7 accesses, and the development at number 11 proposes 2 dwellings on one lot, which will effectively make it 8 accesses. Taking the development of 11 Sturgis Place can address the previous subdivision failures as recommended by Council Senior Council. This afternoon, you, the councils, are acting as the planning authority, and in doing so, are elected representatives of the community. Your community is telling you that this development is inappropriate and should not be approved. 100% of the owner occupiers on the street are against this development, and only one in support, that's the developer. The developer does not live in the street and does not have to live with the implications of approving this application. The planning standards so far let us down by allowing such a great density of housing to be approved, and we need you, the councillors, as representatives of the community, to support us in keeping the area. This afternoon, you have the opportunity to represent the community or support a single developer. As representatives elected by the community, we trust that you'll make the correct decision this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Could I ask the chairman to call the next person forward, please?
Good afternoon, my name is Sharon Crawford, and together with my partner, I live at number 2 Stitch Place. So, also thank you for the opportunity to allow me to speak against the proposed development. I had to take some time to read through everything to understand not only my concerns but also the other residents' concerns, and I think it's only fair that I understand both sides. But what I understand from this whole process, the reason I'm standing here though, is because regardless of the plan's recommendations, you have communities pleading you to consider the impact this development has on them. And I personally had the opportunity to ask you to stop and consider the social and economic impacts your decision has on the community, which is our community. I would respectfully ask that you represent us, the people, and base your decision today on what is right and what is the right thing to do for the community. I know if you were to ask anybody that's not even standing here today, are 12 units in a 15-block cul-de-sac normal or okay or reasonable, the answer would be no. So I think 10 units already there and enough is enough. In my line of work, we always have processes and limitations and often conflicts of interest. And to overcome this, we apply something called the should we test to guide us in our decision making to always ensure we do what is fair and reasonable by the business, the customer, and we ask ourselves, do we meet the community expectations? So I ask you this. Should you approve a development in the spring where you have 100% of the occupants against? Should you allow your decision of voting yes be a representation of one developer in the community who will build and move on, or those that reside and want to stay and reside in the street? Should you say yes to the increased traffic in a small cul-de-sac to potentially 40 cars coming and going, making movement, parking and child safety a concern? Should you accept approving a development that may have financial impact to the community in the way of devaluation of properties? Should you approve an additional multi-dwelling development knowing there is already insufficient space for placement of rubbish bins in the collection? And the planning solution was that the developer contacts the council infrastructure to find a solution. Should you accept the planner's recommendation that us, the residents, contact the Tasmanian police to give people park on the footpath? I believe this is a waste of resources and we can be proactive rather than reactive. There's currently cars parking on the footpath and we're creating a great community. And I think for us to pick up the phone and call the police to say that someone's parking on the footpath when they shouldn't ruins the community we're creating in Sturgis Place. So whilst I don't know the Planning Act in and out, I do know what is right, and I trust today that you will apply the should we test and do the right thing as representatives elected by the community to do what is right. And I hope today you apply the should we test. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Jim, anybody else to speak?
Through you, Mr. Manley Burke and Emily Nixon.
Sunferry Church and 5 Sturgis Place.
That's one of the last. That's the William Burke. Carrie's also on the list.
Right, so thank the mayor, deputy mayor, councillors for hearing me out. There have been concerns of tenant in this cul-de-sac.
Sorry, Terry's a little bit upset there, so I'll just speak on his behalf if that's all right. His biggest concern is the traffic in the cul-de-sac. He worries about the young children who live in the area and his grandchildren who can't walk on the footpath because of cars and four-wheel drives parking on them so that the traffic can still get through. He's witnessed the death of a child who was 5 years old, run over by a four-wheel drive, caused by the children running between two vehicles and the driver later took his own life. This accident could happen in Sturgis Place because of the volume of traffic and no one wants to live with that. It's only agreed from the developers and the council. The street was very similar to Sturgis Place and overrun by units and motor vehicles. Emergency vehicles will have trouble getting in and out, and the garbage truck doesn't have enough room to turn around currently. So I urge the council to reconsider these units and say no. Terry chose Sturgis Place as their last home at 7 years old. They don't want to be moving, but also don't want to be forced out by the inconvenience of second-rate units. The developer has a pedigree of building poor quality units that are already showing issues at the other end of the cul-de-sac. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, any more?
Liam. Liam Burke. Emily. Emily Nixon. Mr. Mayor.
So I'm Emily Nixon, and we're from 3 Sturgis Place. So we're the youngest members in the street. So my room is 23 and 25. Neither of us have children, but we watch the children every day by the street. And it breaks my heart that all they're doing is watching for cars, all that sort of stuff. We have our dog in town, and we're the only people that have dogs. We're forced to walk on the road, which puts us at risk, but also puts the drivers at risk. We're in their space. The road is their own space for us to be walking across. My other issue, I guess, is the fact that there's currently a line that's there now across 15 blocks, as mentioned in my original letter. And the two units that are planned go ahead will be 11. It just doesn't really sit right with me. And as you can see from everyone else, we built this cute little community. We have Christmas lunches and all that sort of stuff. And we need to support each other. That's what I'm doing. So it'd be nice if we could sit up 2 minutes with me.
Thank you. Jim?
So I think that's the last of the speaking representatives we've got. Is it Simon? Simon, I understand that you're not you haven't made a representation, and therefore you're not entitled to speak. Is that right? So, Mr. Mayor, that's the end of the representation.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for all those that spoke.
Point of note, clarification, it probably would have been possible for Mr. Richardson to have asked a question or made a point by way of a question without notice. Prior to going into this agenda item, is there any facility to revisit that on that basis? In other words, time allotted for questions without notice probably wasn't anywhere near exceeded. Is there any ability, is it set in concrete in terms of our process, that we can't revisit that at a later point in the meeting?
One through you, Mr. Mayor, the question I'd need to clarify in my mind is we're acting now as a planning authority as opposed to operating in the context of the ordinary conduct of a meeting.
But, well, again, is there any inability to go out of that and come re-enter it?
Well, it'll be a procedural motion, as I understand it, to change the order of the meeting.
I'd move a procedural motion that we move out of the item to allow Mr. Richardson to speak or ask a question without notice, and then resume the normal agenda.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, just before we do that, Councillor, probably seek the views of the planners as to proper process from their point of view. Any objection to it in a practical sense? Rather than be overly technical about it, I suppose.
Well,
As far as I'm aware, we will speak for the audio. To the best of my knowledge, we can step out of plan if I don't know. We'll go back in to it.
Okay, I'm happy to accept Councillor Sinfield's procedural motion that we actually step out of acting as a planning authority and allow Simon up the back, and I can just see Simon, to come forward and ask questions that will be either answered or taken on notice. Councillor Sinfield, is that your...
Procedural motion we need to vote on, of course.
Yep, that's right. We need a seconder for that procedural motion.
I need a seconder if the chair accepts it.
Yep. I'll call for a seconder on the procedural motion then. Councillor Central Mood, seconder.
Mr. Mayor, you don't require a seconder for a procedural.
Okay, motion. I'll put the motion then. Although all those in favour of doing that, as we've just stated, please say aye and hold your hand up. Thank you. Okay, looks like we've got a majority of councillors. They're happy to do that. So we'll move back into... There's always something different at our council meetings, isn't there? We'll move back into questions without notice.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, just to be clear, we're moving out of planning.
We are now moving out of planning authority. That is correct, General Manager.
Thanks for that. I haven't got nothing.
Could you just state your name, Simon, full name, please, for the recording?
Simon Marion Richardson. I live at 468 Westbury Road Prospect, and I have since about 1936.
Yeah, thank you.
And I was the one that developed Harley Blade, Sturgis, Bell Drive, and some other streets in the area. Not organised as far as having that some, this is just like a cut, but back in the old days, and I've gone for too long, in 1986 I did my first development, and back then, when a developer developed a land into residential lots, we were required to nominate so many lots for units, and then the council would make a decision based on that. And that was basically so that it wasn't overwhelmed by ministers of voters and taking into consideration the size of the street and so on. Obviously, since then, things have changed, and that's no longer the case. I was not really aware that there was that many units in the street. But I can understand the people who are in that street being concerned about the traffic flow and so on. So I'm in the process of doing my other development now, which is Daytona Rise, which is it comes off the Safari Parade as well, which is only up the road from Sturgis Place. So I've taken it upon myself to put covenants on the residential and temporary lots that I'm developing now so that we don't fall into the same situation. And that's I don't believe it's not really my job to do that. I believe it's a council job to make sure that we don't get too many developments in an area when we have provision for a street that's X amount of metres wide. And that should be taken into account when you're asking people to do developments or approving subdivisions to make sure that if you're going to have a large number of units developed in an area, then of course, one would think the street should be wider. So there's plenty of regulation out there for us doing developments and as far as subdivisions go, but it doesn't seem like there is much protection and much thought that goes into protecting the people who buy these lots, who want to live there, bring up their children, and have a happy life. I mean, and I've been up there, and it's too many cars, it's too much traffic for dead end street. And I think that at this point in time, we shouldn't be having any developments as far as units go in that street. And as I said, I'll be taking it upon myself as a developer to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks, Councillor Sinfield, for that.
Well, if I may, I think it's fairly easy to insert a question in there. Has there been a change over time that's altered how we deal with these things? And so perhaps one of the things that might be able to contribute through the general manager, we might be able to get a statement or a comment on a change that occurred a few years ago that limits our ability to deal with the matters that we just talked about in terms of the number of multiple instances.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I defer to Joe.
Yep.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Short answer is yes. There were changes brought about through Planning Directive 4.1, which is the statewide planning directive for residential development for single dwellings and multiple dwellings. There are statewide provisions. Previously, our planning scheme contained provisions for the number of dwelling units you could have within a street. That was eliminated with Planning Directive 4. Numerous other planning schemes had the same sorts of provisions, which were also eliminated by Planning Directive 4. Council no longer has the ability to regulate the number of multiple dwellings that you would find in a street. I know that the developer Mr. Richardson made a comment in regards to future development, making provision for it not to happen again. That's particularly difficult with private covenants. However, a developer can do this through sales agreements, private sales agreements, where they are prepared to take on the enforcement of that issue privately. In a civil matter, I know that the developers of Advent Hills Estate are very seriously looking at that themselves for this particular issue as well. It's a vexed question amongst many councils across the state because of Planning Directive 4, which are now standard provisions, about to be cemented in the Tasmanian Planning Scheme, which actually makes those provisions even more difficult to deal with in terms of any issues that they have. So councils are stuck, well and truly, on this matter. I would recommend representatives and any member of the public with concerns take their concerns to the Minister for Planning. The Minister for Planning is the only authority by which a change to the Tasmanian Planning Scheme provisions can be made. And our pressure may build some success.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah. Councillor Temple?
Have we moved back into planning mode?
No, we have not yet, sir. Being that there are no further comments or questions, Councillor Knott.
Question. Am I right, Mr. Mayor, through you, Mr. Mayor? Am I right that the only provision is that as far as multiple dwellings, they must be 325 square metres? If you had 800 square metre block, you've got two units there.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, Councillor is referring to that you're saying in general residential zone and
yes.
Your side area per dwelling. An acceptable solution is 325 square metres per dwelling, and that's the only density test provided for multiple dwellings in the general residential zone.
Just an adjunct to that. Currently in this particular cul-de-sac,
Councillor Knott, can we move back into the actual planning authority where you can ask those questions? Thank you. I think they're relevant questions for the planning authority, Councillor. So I'll reread that. For the purpose of considering the following planning authority items, Council is acting as a planning authority under the provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993. Okay. So I've had the representatives. We've had the discussion. We have to, I'll just scroll on my screen, so excuse me. We need a mover and a seconder to either go forward or not with this particular project. Do we have somebody to move? Councillor King to move. Do we have a seconder? Do we have a second? Councillor Kelly, thank you. Councillor King is the mover of the motion. Any comments?
Not at this stage, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kelly is the seconder of the motion.
Not at this stage, I open up for discussion with other councillors.
Thank you. Councillor Knott, you had a question before. Might be relevant to ask that question now, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as it stands at the moment, that where there are lots that haven't been developed in this particular Sturgis Place, it is possible that there could be, because of the size of the lots, there could be further multiple dwelling applications.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, that is correct.
Any other discussions, councillors, questions?
If I may.
Yep.
I think that the assessor has done a pretty good job to address some of the specific concerns of some of the representatives. However, I still struggle with this in terms of the visualness. I can't comment on a hypothetical revision of how two dwellings might sit on that block, but I suspect there would be alternate ways of realignment that I'd be more happy with than I am with this. That will form a view, to go back to the specific development application that's in front of us. I don't think enough is done by way of visual mitigation to satisfy me that the current arrangement is a good one. We've heard from the strategic plan, I think, has enunciated quite well the fact that it's a horse's ass in terms of the removal that the state government undertook a few years ago in terms of one of the elements that we had to address this kind of issue. It is really sad that for whatever reason that occurred, I believe it's quite dumb. It didn't mean that multiple dwellings couldn't occur in a street or an area. It allowed you to take into account a whole lot of considerations such as how far you are from shopping centres and doctors and services and schools and access via buses, etc. And we've lost that ability. We're simply down to that square metre density rule. And here is, in my view, a perfect example of where it's coming back to bite us. The length of the cul-de-sac and the number of properties around the head is an issue, but again, we can't basically go there. I just think that, in terms of just a rearranging, might have persuaded me otherwise, but absolutely hearing anything that changes my mind, I'll be voting against this proposal.
Thanks, Councillor. Yes, Councillor Sheriff.
Can I just ask the planners? Obviously, this proposed development has been submitted to the old planning scheme. Can you tell me the differences if this has been submitted to the new scheme, which we're close to moving into?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. We have to make a decision for the availability of the planning scheme. And so that's what my assessment is done. I have noted in the report that the Tasmanian Planning Scheme State Planning Provisions do remove the two clauses that are triggering discretions in this application. The first one being the need for a non-facing window, and the second one allowing for parking and turning within the front setback in the general residential zone. I guess to answer your question, it potentially would have a limited status in the Tasmanian planning scheme, meaning it doesn't need to go through public notification. Council can only approve a permitted application with any conditions relevant to the proposal.
So just following up on that, if this didn't get approved today and they resubmit it in a few weeks' time when the new planning scheme comes in, this proposal will then come to council.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that is more than likely. I undertook somewhat of an assessment, but until we get the final draft of the Tonight Tasmanian planning scheme, it is likely that it would not require to come to council and be notified to the public.
Councillors, any other discussion, comment? Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can I first of all thank those whose representatives who have spoken today and given us their thoughts and views on this particular development. But I particularly thank Mr. Richardson, the developer. I've never met Mr. Richardson. But it's refreshing in a sense, and he's very frank comments, because I believe that in the main, the developers are very keen to get as many sales as they can. That's what their job is, to sell lots of land. Obviously, this developer is concerned for the future, because it could well prevent some sales from going through. Very nice and frank comment. We all know that in this particular municipality, I'm going to go in my neck of the woods, across from Barra, to look at the proliferation of units, also in Westbury, not here at Carrick, and more so in Prospect Bar. And I do think certainly take the to talk to the Minister for Planning doesn't help the situation. I think Mr. Sun, who contacted all of us and so on, there have been some issues that have been answered by the planners in that regard. But it's the visual energy, parking, and so on is a real concern. Otherwise, these people would not be here today. And I also take what the planners have said to us about the future, about the permitted use. I'm disappointed in the sense that the situation is as it is, where maybe 325 square metres, you can put two or more units if you have sufficient size. Because you will have, and no doubt there are other streets and homes and whatever, where there's a proliferation of units and people buy a lot and have no idea what the future might hold. It's a very strong concern. I can see that Mr. Sutton mentions existing housing volume exceeds the limit of infrastructure to allow future dwellings or further dwellings would cause unnecessary congestion. It's an issue. And thank you for his comments. But I ask a question to the planners. Is it possible to put forward to have any an alternate motion that might be put to the council? From the details that may
Councillor Knott, I don't know that we can actually ask our planners to put forward an alternative motion. I think it has to come from the floor, from the councillors.
So it can be guided by the planners in relation to the possibility of alternate motion.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I think I need to a little bit more specifics in terms of what you're trying to achieve in the alternative motion. That's a fairly open-ended, broad question, Councillor.
Do you have an alternative motion that you have prepared or not?
I'm not sure, Mr. Mayor, whether the wording I have is acceptable or not. More to do with visual appearance and so on, and exacerbating the problems with street name. Do they qualify under the planning scheme as grounds?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I think it's important to point out the discretions, which is where you can exercise your discretions. In this instance, it would be the design and layout of car parking, which is E6.7.2. It states there that the location of car parking and manoeuvring spaces must not be detrimental to the streetscape or the amenity of the surrounding areas. Having regard to it, there's a list there, councillor, including the layout of the site and the location of the existing buildings, the views into the site from the road and adjoining public spaces, the ability to access the site and rear of buildings, the layout of car parking in the vicinity, and the level of landscaping proposed for the car parking.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Does that indicate that the challenge to the discretion is possible? Would that be worded in that form, as a refusal?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So I have done an assessment based on the performance criteria where I'm recommending that it complies with that performance criteria. On the flip side, obviously there is a different side to that, so that would be opportunity to say that it doesn't comply with the performance criteria and therefore an air permit should not be issued.
So I'll be guided for what wording for that.
I think that goes to a different matter. What you're really saying is, okay, if you don't agree with the the subjectivity, if you like, the qualification of whether it meets the performance criteria, you're rejecting it. But an alternate motion is saying, can we rearrange the site perhaps or put the parking somewhere else? And is that a significant departure from the application we've got before us? And hence, it wouldn't be an alternate. It would have to come back as a new DA potential, a new development application. So, on the one hand, you're being asked to do you agree with the assessment that it does meet, acceptably meet the performance criteria, or if you think it doesn't, then reject it, and that the reasons why you'd be saying why you don't agree with that, that's your grounds for refusal, but that's a different thing to rearranging the site and then doing it.
I guess the other option is to vote against it.
Moving on, Councillor Sheriff.
What we've got to keep in mind that if this gets rejected and the applicant decides to resubmit,
technically, you've got to deal with the here and now, not what might happen in the future. We've got an application before us that's to be assessed under the interim scheme with the proviso that you also look at the state provision.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I would just like to make a comment there in regards to my comments on the status of it in the Tasmanian planning scheme. So we've been given the draft provisions and I've done an assessment based on what we've been given. I don't want to sit here and guarantee that it would be permitted in a couple of weeks' time because I'd hate to cut that influence any sort of decision. In my opinion, and based on the information provided to me at this time, it would have a permitted status, but obviously until the time where that is in operation, we do have a final copy. I would just like to note that it's just been done on the information.
Thank you. So herein lies the problem. We have an application before us that some of us have gone and had a look at. Some of us understands the residents' concerns to do with parking and the provisions of the garbage truck not being able to get around properly and about garbage bins being shifted. We've had our council staff look at the planning scheme of which we currently work under and have made recommendations to us councillors. And there, in my view, is a problem that we have that while we are some of us are not in favour of or not wanting to see this happen on this site. We have rules that we have to abide by, and we can either choose to pass or reject the motion as it sits at the moment. And yes, I'll back up what Councillor Knott said, thank those representatives for coming forward and speaking to us and raising their concerns. I understand that. But it is a tough one for us councillors. So are there any other discussions, councillors? Councillor Kelly.
Through you, Mayor, it's a question to maybe Chairman Oliver. Say, for example, if we were to reject this as council, the developer, no doubt, could go to the next level and take it to the tribunal. What's the likelihood of succeeding?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that's probably a very difficult question to answer. I've done my assessment, and I guess that's my how I've interpreted the performance criteria. I haven't looked at tribunal decisions around the particular performance criteria in the design label car parking, so I can't provide any advice on past tribunal decisions and how that's being interpreted.
Councillor Kelly again.
I'll ask it in a different way. If it's declined, what are the benefits of defending it?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I guess our professional planner has done an assessment and she's assessed that it makes those criteria. And so we've gone forward and put that recommendation forward because that's what, based on Laura's professional opinion in accordance with the scheme, where we should be going. I guess that's all we can say that the concern seems to be about parking in the street. The parking is the discretion that's being triggered, Laura, rather than allowing parking occurring on the street. All of that parking is happening on the site, so in her assessment that's a better outcome for a planning decision.
Thank you.
Thanks, Krista. Councillors, any other discussion? If not, I'll go back to... Sorry, Councillor King. Yes, Councillor Kelly was the seconder of the motion.
Yeah, I'd like to thank all those people who have come in and put their representations forward. As it's very tough for us as councillors acting as a planning authority in all the ways. Things are employed in so many different ways. I think it was a motion to forget where it was taken out of council's hands or look back for the decision making like this. So I agree with Councillor Knox, so I'm very able to take it on your own to do that type of thing because it's a lot easier to chase the dollars. So congratulations on that approach. With this, I'll have to be supporting the staff for the work that they've put in, and they have looked at all the concerns, and it is a dog's breakfast.
Thanks, Councillor Kelly. Councillor King is the mover of the motion.
Thank you. I do sympathise with the representatives and thank you for taking the time to make their views known. I understand the concerns, however, the application has been deemed compliant. My understanding of the current situation and the introduction of the new planning scheme next week is that this application would be approved without even triggering the discretionary decisions from council. I appreciate the invitation to subject the application to the should be test. However, from experience, the Tasmanian Planning Commission will not take any of this into consideration if and when the applicant appeals. I wish to thank Planner Laura Small for the work she's done on the assessment and the recommendation. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor King. And on that basis, I will then put the motion. All those in favour of the motion as it stands, please raise your hands.
Kelly,
recorded.
Sheriff Johnson.
Yeah. All those against, please raise your hands.
Not Sinfield and Temple.
Thank you. The motion is passed. Thank you. Moving on to development item two. For those in the gallery that want to leave, you may feel free to leave.
Motion before council, the recommending officer Joel has a minor amendment to make to it at your discretion.
Okay. So, do we want to go through the minor amendments first before we get the representatives to come forward or not?
Mr. Mayor,
it's my choice. Okay, Joe. Yes, Jim.
I just so you're aware, I understand that none of the representatives are proposing to speak.
Right. So we have some. Do we have anybody to speak for or against on this motion or not?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Thank you.
Wishing to speak.
Okay. Then I'll ask Joe to talk about the minor amendments, please, before we put this to the vote as a planning authority PA2.
Mr. Mayor, the minor amendment is for PA3, not PA2. It's for the Country Club Amendment.
Ah, okay. Right.
Without making any changes to my
discretion. Okay. Let Daisy fix then. Righto, lot 801 Bartley Street, Planning Authority 2. Would somebody like to move, somebody like to, and then somebody like to second that motion as it sits? I call again, a mover of the motion, Councillor Kelly, thank you. A seconder, Councillor King, thank you. Councillor Kelly is the mover. Thank you, Councillor King.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, open up for questions or comments, councillors. Councillor Temple.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My first question follows on from the last agenda item. Just to gain some indication as to how many multiple unit dwellings may be put on these lots before us. The person in the street may well think that 190 residential lots mean 190 residents, but it may mean something quite different.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Whether or not multiple dwellings are developed on individual residential lots is governed by, as you know, the specific rules of the planning scheme. There is an entitlement there if you meet certain standards, and that's the case now, as I mentioned earlier, under Planning Directive 4, which is embedded in our planning scheme. But if you meet those standards, you are entitled to develop those lots for multiple dwellings. At the moment, the site density is 1 per 325 square metres.
My second question, Mr. Mayor, if I may, was that in there somewhere is talk of a pedestrian outstand in Meander Valley Road. that's inferred to the documentation. But as this may be, this whole development, as it grows and grows beyond this, mainly many young families, etc., at what point would the need be triggered to have a pedestrian overpass or underpass across the end of the road?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'll provide a visit, but I'll also refer to the Director of Infrastructure in regards to traffic standards. A fundamental part of looking at the interface of this, the development on the southern side of the Amber Valley Road to the rest of the township and to the Amber Valley Road is pedestrian safety, the speed environment, and this has been fundamental to our discussion about whether or not a roundabout is included at the junction of the Amber Valley Road and Bartlett Street, and when that should occur, what those thresholds look like, and the nature of crossing points across Meander Valley Road. So as part of this proposal, there's no proposal to have a pedestrian outstand, but there is a requirement for a Part 5 agreement to contribute toward the construction of the roundabout and Market Street as the first principal crossing to be constructed as part of its development. This is my view, Dino may correct me. The nature of the interventions that we're expecting along Meander Valley Road from both ends, if you envisage this development fully complete on the southern side, it requires a significant slowing of the traffic through gateway treatments at either end of the town and also treatments through Meander Valley Road, as well as a really good off-street pedestrian pathway and heading down toward the future business centre. So all of those things in combination should manage under the applicable standards the ability for children, families to cross that road safely with a 60 or even a 50 kilometre an hour type speed limit, but it requires those gateway treatments and roundabouts to get that speed limit changed. That's why, as you know, Councillor, we've already said as officers that we think the integration of the roundabout through part of this proposal is critical to those safety aspects. So you won't need a pedestrian overpass or anything quite that significant if we get the combination of the rest of those treatments right and vastly reduce that speed environment. Ben, is there anything you'd like to add?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, only just to add that Joe mentioned there's a business sort of area or mixed use area as part of the development, and also an intersection treatment which would link up the new section of Hadston through to sort of Winifred Gain, and there's an IGA there and Hadston Bull Run, and obviously there needs to be good connectivity for children if they're looking to go to a school, if there is a school site there. So one of the concepts we have on the table is potentially signals at that particular intersection on the extension of Winifred Jane, but that hasn't been locked in, but we'll certainly concur with Joe's comments around the other treatments, the sign, the traffic, etc.
Mr. Mayor, my last question relates to school buses. The current solution is that in the morning, I think I'm still correct, that the bus stands out in the Amber Valley Road, and I know there's a new potential plan that sort of a new drop or something that the bus goes around, just with potentially hundreds of more students up in that area as it grows. Is there any intent for the actual school buses to drive up Barclay Street and then come do a circuit through the new area, or is it intended that school children will get on the buses and off the buses at near the intersection of Barclay and the Antwerp Road?
I'll go first. That's through you, Mr. Mayor. part of the original, very original consultations in developing the outline development for the metro. It has always been envisaged that a bus route will be key through the entire development, will work from the mixed-use business centre and go around through the Barbary Street. That's the eventual outcome. In the interim, we still need to make provisions for safe management of the existing use of the bus on Barbary Street.
Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Hang on, Bruno's about to say something.
Oh, sorry.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, further to that question, Councillor Temple, the Department of State, right, I imagine, will be having conversations with their sort of country bus service as well, and I expect it's sort of an obvious outcome. I want to remove the bus pickup from the section of those sort of high speed areas.
Mr. Mayor, a supplementary question, but if I may, relating to what we've just heard. Is there anywhere in this new estate that there will be defined future bus stops, and do we have the correct road widths and other considerations to make that all possible?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, we have the correct road widths. It's a fundamental part of the state provisions to allow for accessible grade bus stops. The design of the roads that will eventually come in, should the subdivision be approved, will provide for that capacity as well. So you won't have any really steep grade changes so that the accessible buses can make the appropriate turns. They have the right geometry. Has the right cross elevation and the enhanced widths on the top road through the amenity corridor provides good amenity and space to have those bus stops functioning really well. In addition to that, the business centre also envisages good quality bus stops, not just an arm or on the side of the road, an integral into the design. We just need to keep a weather eye on that for the future to make sure that those things can be built in at the right time.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Knott.
Question, Mr. Mayor. I understand that from the traffic consultant that at some stage in this development, that there will be a roundabout. That's the case. I believe that the speed limit on Rand Valley Highway could be 80 kilometres an hour. Is that correct?
I'm going to defer to the Director of Infrastructure for that one.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, Department of State Growth, I guess, would confirm speed limit, but subject to treatments that might occur at Main Street intersection as well. And per Joe's comments earlier about potential 50, this depends on the level of activity through that particular section of the road.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Any other questions, councillors?
Yes.
Councillor Sinfield.
A few technical ones that we didn't, we ran out of time earlier on to ask. And I'm sure our senior strategic plan will be able to go to the meeting on the spot. Page 84, for example, says in the recommended conditions that prior to the sealing of the final plan and survey, the road network and stormwater system will be completed in accordance with condition one and the approved condition. Page 73, there's a dot point there about the confirmation of the traffic management plan, so it's under the second dot point in the condition. This doesn't show up in the first
document, the first document does, which sort of goes to the issues that we want to come back to the treaty, something in the future, that was it.
Through you, Mayor, combined group in terms of merging them into one action by the road authority when those modifications and sign off comes through.
And on page 87, there's two dot points there, I'm not wrong with that, but go to the same issue. The third one and the fifth one under recommended conditions, it's talking about in the first one, the road is to include semi mount or curve for cars back down the temporary turning heads, and then two dot points later, it sort of says the same thing again with that traffic cones. But I can't find in those. So if you've been higher than that in the condition, dealt with some of them as separate individual items, fine. But I can't find a sort of specific reference to footpaths. Is it the intention that every street have a footpath? And the reason I ask that is that the, sadly on page 83, the ugly word for me of open swale has got a mention, and I was just concerned as to whether we are in fact requiring a footpath in every common clip across streets and alleys and meetings linking with assumption. But it is a requirement of the network adjacent to those roads.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, deliberately left a little bit of flexibility in the condition itself in terms of the recommendation. So I've recommended very specific modifications to the plan to enhance the connectivity of the pedestrian network and the amenity. There may need to be some adjustments of footpaths to accommodate that, and that's not nailed down at this stage. Footpaths are an inherent part of road design when a subdivision plan comes in. So I just bundled the two together in terms of when we include a recommendation that detailed engineering designs are one, to incorporate the required modifications and then to be submitted in accordance with council standards to the satisfaction of the director of the infrastructure. So the infrastructure department then picks it up and make sure that footpaths are included in those designs in accordance with our standard. We are not required to sign off or release any subdivision until we're satisfied that that's done in terms of the design. It's just making sure that you've got that link between the modifications on a strategic level that you're looking for, and then the detailed engineering design takes over, and then the infrastructure department picks it up post-approval and makes sure that that's carried through. So there's part of our normal standard, and Dino might jump in and add if getting anything wrong, or if there is anything else we should be adding, but my understanding is that there is absolutely always in an urban environment a footpath network along the sides of roads.
Well, I was just concerned that somebody, you know, the proponent wouldn't read that here, or you know, get into a phone call about whether or not we have to provide it.
And if they tried, they just simply wouldn't get their subdivision seal. It makes it, our condition makes it very clear that the local government standards apply, and that requires, they have very detailed requirements for footpaths and the standard of those footpaths. We just need to make sure it matches in with the strategic alignment changes.
And my final question, I think, at this stage is, I know there are other stages to come, but the publication space that's shown on page 1 of your revised plan. As I say, a potential question on the basis that there might be other elements that connect around that, but it appears to me that the only access to that publication space is via a
more sensitive urban design areas. In other words, a footpath network. Is there a road network for that? And the reason that I ask this is that in Prospect Vale, a couple of years ago, we sold off a reserve that had no steam in behind houses and not easily visible and accessible, and we sold it off through the development of the area and developed another reserve. And so on that basis is there a consistency, and as I say, it's pretty conditional on the fact that there might be other pieces to this puzzle that I might have on the page.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, there is a vehicular access to the future public open space. The first, so in terms of stage six, vehicular access, though not for the public, is available up through the easement that you can see through to the reservoir. So that would be the, what you would call the utility access. No, no, it's not public. And similarly, we would also have utility access off the end of the cul-de-sac at stage 16. The main future public vehicular access is through the second part of to the north, along the northeastern corner boundary. On my diagram, figure 2, page 61, where the arrow says move alignment of public open space entrance to correspond with pedestrian pathway water line. That is a very wide entrance at about 20 metres. So that provides for both drainage, pathway, vehicular access, and also parking to provide for example, like disabled access to the bushland reserve. But that won't come online. That's the only ability really to do that and have actual proper parking areas without taking out, you know, little trees that you don't want to take out. That's the best place to come in. So it's going to have to be a two-pronged approach to vehicular access. First stage to be taken as part of the contribution, which is part of stage six, which is noted as a public open space for open utility access for vehicles and pedestrian, open pedestrian access for the public. The second stage, which is the area to the northeast, will be when we're going to have to purchase that as a council because it exceeds the 5%. So when that happens, that's when the fully fledged public vehicular access goes in. And really, it's a council's discretion as to when they want to pursue that particular phase.
One final. I've forgotten about was, and it goes back to Councillor Temple's original question about mobile dwellings. I take it it's not impossible to revisit the specific area plan provisions the community had a desire to override the mobile dwelling aspect to actually insert something in a specific area plan. Process, I suspect, but to actually that would override the state government's planning directive in terms of the general residential part of what we're looking at. Is a potential pathway to limit the number of overall dwellings in that area?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, once the new Tasmanian planning scheme is in effect as of next month, council can apply for an amendment to its local provision schedule to incorporate additional provisions into its specific area plan. It would have to provide justification as to why it should be any different than the rest of the state, and that would be no small order to achieve. But in my experience, if you get significant support from a community, you have a better chance of succeeding or not. Thank you.
Councillor Knotts.
Your last question has just come to my attention.
Councillor Knotts, I just
want to learn that. Something that was brought up by one of the representatives in the previous application, talking about something in this one, had some hills. That is on page 60, I've now found on page 62, 2B, where it says, with no more than four lots taking access from the turning head, and it would adjust the lot layout accordingly. Is that a minimum? Or what? So I did ask the question, would that be an answer? Is that the council's limit or minimum of four in a turning to in a cul-de-sac?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I knew you'd been asking that question.
Sorry.
I knew you'd been asking that question. It's a vexed issue. There's no absolute standard. In this particular instance, we looked at this particular circumstance and the particular layout being proposed. This condition was as a response to the location of that particular cul-de-sac on this topography in this layout. So it's a very case-by-case matter. It was a limitation that we felt was reasonable under these circumstances because there was an alternative available to get lot yield through a small increase in the number of internal lots to minimise those issues with the heads of cul-de-sacs. More generally, I think that's an approach that is possible to defend with a very detailed look at each circumstance to this degree. It requires a bit of foresight, I think. I think the benefit for Padstone is the fact that we have more detail in expectation to a specific area plan than a generic general residential zone. Because the provisions are so generic. It's a bit different than the story we're trying to stitch together for Hadston, which provides their backup. So I suppose it's a bit of a clue, maybe for future developments, future rezonings, perhaps, in terms of looking at those issues and maybe trying to head off some trouble of the past.
Thank you.
Okay, councillors, any other questions? Discussions.
One more question, if I may, to the last point on page 82. It says that all but six lots of 165 within the general residential zone comply with the minimum lot area. Of those, the lot sizes range from 600 to 672 square metres. But then in the next paragraph, it says that it is noted that the condition widen the walkway through stages 4 and 12 will likely result in a reduction of some lot areas to just below the 700 square metre mark. I assume that is referring to an additional unknown number of, or a number of additional lots, the number of which is unknown. Do we have any order of magnitude of numbers of that might be?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, no, don't. Councillors, my understanding is that councillors have also been contacted by the developer, the applicant, in regards to my recommendation for this walkway and trying to accommodate reasonable yields. I note that no councillor has yet raised it, so it's probably at this point prudent for me to mention it. The developer has submitted the 10 metres width, an extension width to 10 metres, provides better for lot sizes without losing too many lots. So to maintain a slightly higher size than slightly lower. I wanted to mention to councillors that I'm reasonably comfortable with that. 12 metres, I've recommended 12 because it's comfortable. They've requested council consider 10 meetings, which in my view is workable to the same sort of outcome. But noting that in doing so, it probably provides a slightly better size residential lots. When I made that recommendation, I calculated we could still maintain the same number of lots, albeit a bit smaller. So if a councillor wants to move an amendment to the motion to change the 12 metres to 10, I want to let you know I'm comfortable with that. We can achieve the same outcomes and provide for probably slightly better lot sizes in that adjustment. I don't have a sense of exactly how many. My view was that we didn't need to change the number of lots, just that their sizes would change.
So if I may ask on a follow-up on that, the 12 metres is what we're getting at. And as a follow-up to that, on page 94 of the development, Mr. Benson, is making a comment that on page 94 of his letter to us on the 9th of November, that under the heading of the road network, differs in some respects to the Hugo outline plan. The reason for this is that the outline in the SAP is not considered, so in the specific area plan, is not considered to be a safe road network. We've obtained a report from PCS in relation to the traffic system and the road layout that we are proposing is considered to be a better and safer and more appropriate road network than that change in the saying that the changes that we've made are in compliance with or reflect or further the outline development plan?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There's been two plans that have been done for this happened area. There was the original outline development plan, which embodied the original consulted principles and objectives for the area in consultation with the Aspen community. That's the one that's the foundational strategic basis for the amendment that followed in terms of the values that are, that are described in the local area objectives and the design of character statements. So they're the ones that hold priority, in my view, because that's where all of this came from. There was a subsequent master plan done by a separate firm, consultancy firm from Melbourne, and that plan finished. It generally reflects the original OBP, squares things up a bit, probably a little bit more practical in terms of developability, but it still missed a few key elements. My understanding is that one of the things that were not properly developed, probably in either plan, was the detail of how the road network and those junctions functioned on a hierarchical basis. The master plan, which is what I know a lot of developers have been looking at, that are contemplating development in the Hadsden area and certainly the landowners as well, they sort of focus on the master plan, the second one, which has issues. They look at that. It's an expensive plan. It's a plan that overloads the roads. It's not particularly practical in its junction layout. Talking to when the traffic engineers have gotten down to the nitty gritty, it has those flaws. So my reading of Richard Burke's assessment of the area of the layout and looking at the master plan is that it didn't actually provide ideal traffic safety and hierarchy. So residential, my understanding, the residential environment is at its safest when you have a hierarchy of roads from the lowest speed roads, which are cul-de-sacs, to the next level, which are connecting local roads through to your main collector roads, which you distribute to the arterial network. It provides a good explanation in his report that this proposal does that. which is why it deviates from the master plan. I think Mr. Dent has seen fit to try and explain and justify the deviation. But the reality is that the master plan has no place in statute or regulation. We're not bound by it as a planning authority. We can take each proposal on its merits on the basis of the explanation. And I'm comfortable and I've come around to agree to Mr. Burke's proposition in terms of this particular layout, subject to the modifications for improvements in pedestrian connectivity and also road crossing treatments for a safe minimum and sort of direct connectivity perspective.
Okay, any other councillors with questions, please? Take that as a no. I'll go back to Councillor King as the seconder of the motion.
Thanks, but I think there's been plenty of discussion already.
Thanks, Councillor King. Councillor Kelly is the mover of the motion.
You just like a banjo for all the hard work to win this.
Thank you. Okay, on that basis, I will put the motion as it sits at the moment. All those in favour of the motion, Councillor Knott?
I wish to speak if I could, Mr. Dean.
No, Councillor Knott, I asked a question going forward before I put the seconder first and the seconder. You had your chance, Councillor.
Respect, Mr. Mayor, you asked if there are any further questions.
Sure.
There wasn't that. You didn't actually ask if anyone wanted to speak to the motion.
I stand corrected. Councillor Knott, go forth, please.
Thank you. I'll be brief. Thank you for that ruling. It's important, I think, to make some comments. Extremely significant application when you have 109 lots. And it's up to council decision. Started off this particular one in May, 2 years ago, May 19. But I thank, first of all, the Sweetens for being here. Bev was the only representative in that particular issue, dealing with safety and the crossing between Barton Street and Scott Street. It's a shame that there's so little representation. This time with 190 lots, we sit down and have two with Bev and Rod, talking about this, and in addition to that, Simon Bannon and Barton Street, which is on the road safety matter. I'm sure you've all read page 194 and 95 of Sweetman's comments about a particular issue, their disappointment and some of their concerns. They're credible comments because they're long-time residents, plus Rod has significant experience in local government administration. I take very strongly some of the comments that he's made. We know that this started off 2011 with the outline development plan, and then we'll follow that in 2015 with the Hedston urban growth area. I think it's important to make some comments. Okay. Granted, there's been overlays and challenges and limitations in the Hedston area of Gaston Center, and I thank Joe for the work that she's done. We've come to a number of workshops, this is a workshop on the 23rd. The mentions of the roundabout, the Part 5 agreement, and the cost contribution. Quite a good discussion. When I say that the comments that the Sweetens have made, in my view, are significant, talked about, I think, things that perhaps not so much have been overlooked, but it's been overshadowed in a sense. Mentioned the landscape elements of space, achieving the urban desires and outcomes that were discussed, I believe, at some length back many, many years ago for this Hadsman development. And given that ultimately there will be 1,100 lots, it is significant. I don't think we can be glib enough just to pass it off with a sleight of hand. I think it's important for those people to be here and listen to our comments and debate. Is important because they're thinking of the future of Hadsden. And some of the comments that were made at the vision in 2015 indicates one Hadsden connected halves. That's something which needs to be considered. Secondly, Rod mentions enhanced streetscapes within a tree streetscapes in this development. And I think it's very important that that be taken into account. Urban planning perspectives and so on. I realise that once the first lot, the 33 lot was passed, basically, in a sense, the horse has bolted. It's been given the impetus to go on. But I think it's important for us to go as made some comments and where he mentions reasonable improvements in certain numbers of modifications, and especially the pedestrian network. I think the other thing is that, in my view, is that it's such a shame to think that this particular development has just two representations. I believe there's been very few community consultations in the latter years. I know that there was a lot, I read some of them when I came into council back in 2011. Lots of contact and input. I think that perhaps it's lack of awareness. I wouldn't like to think it's apathy, but we could say that. We don't know what that future greenfield site will be. It will be lots of housing, if you think about 1100. It will change the complexion of Meander Valley, because the current size of Hatsman will be more than double. Road network, hopefully with a roundabout and numbers of roundabouts, and some internal roundabouts in the road. So I think it's very important. The road connections are important, and mentioned on page 7 in the report. So I thank them for coming, I thank them for the representation. We want to give it gravitas, in a sense. It's a very important one for us to pass. And certainly, Joe's given that scenario, made some changes. While they perhaps may not go as far as we might have liked from the original vision, it has done something in that sense. Because my comments, basically, the final one is this. They're my views, and I want my view recorded in as much as that I'm disappointed that it hasn't gone far enough. I'm disappointed that perhaps some of the views that are represented by the representer on page 194 and 195 might have been given a bit more kudos, a bit more strength. So I'll be supporting the development since, but I have some reservations, and I believe that this question about the development as such, but I would like to think that in the future that this stands as a beacon, and that my voice at least has been heard at this stage.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Ryan.
Councillor Sinfield.
Yeah, if just make a very quick comment, compared with a lot of what Councillor Knott said, I thank the senior strategic planner. It is a huge amount of work to be doing, along with all the other things that are going on in the municipality at the moment as well. When I first joined the council, upon the passing away of then Deputy Mayor, Bob Lynn. In 2013, the first day I turned up, I was given a copy by the then general manager of the Hatsman Outline Development Plan and the Master Plan. So I might be interested to read it. In my view, the Outline Development Plan was very good. The community was asked for a community park, etc. In terms of what we're doing. It is a greenfield site, it is a huge thing. Yes, it's an appendage on Hatsman, but how often do we get to build a new town? The master plan left me cold, and so I'm pleased that we're, in a sense, paying less attention to that and more to the outline development plan. I would hope that things like that are involving in this stage, the roundabout, that it It might even be capable of taking a four-lane boulevard up the centre of Hadsden, for example. We're looking at those sorts of issues. I know some of the more critical aspects, you know, this is a 20% probably of the new part of Hadsden, that we will look very closely at how we deal with the business centre, the school area, etc. going forward. I will support this, but it is an onerous task in a sense, but I just hope that we do something that makes Hadsden stand out as we're going forward, not just a dormitory suburb for Moses.
Thanks, councillors. Anybody else wishing to make a comment before I put it to the vote? Take that as no. So we've already been Councillor King as second and Councillor Kelly as the mover. On that basis, then, I will put the motion. All those in favour of the motion, please show your hands and say aye.
Aye.
Do
you have that recorded, Jackie? Okay. Those against? Are those against now? Thank you. Those against? I think those Councillor Knott and Councillor Temple were against.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, must have a slow delay here. I didn't see his hand go up early. Okay. Thank you. Councillor Kelly.
I think I might have put Councillor not put his hand up, mine might have blocked it.
No, it didn't. Thank you. Motion passed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Moving. Whilst I bring the next group of representatives in and we get them up on Zoom, so I suggest a 5-minute break for everyone.
That would be terrific. Thank you, General Manager.
What the hell?
Yeah, we've still got the other day. Was that the one you were taking the room next? That was it? Oh.
Thank you. Hey there, Jackie. Was that unanimous, the last decision, or not?
Thank you. Oh, okay, yes, so Peter is speaking and Deborah. Yep. Arlene is with Peter, but not speaking. Yeah, wait a moment. Yes. Yes. Well done. That's what it's good.
Are we back?
How is it up in the command actual?
Sorry?
How is it up in the command
capsule? Oh, it's just starting to cloud over down along Queensland. It's sitting at about 24 degrees, and I'd say there's probably some fish out there that the deputy mayor couldn't catch the other day.
A bit scary.
Yeah.
Quite short on.
Okay, we were. Yeah, I was just they're putting images in our heads that we don't need. Okay. Are we back, Jim?
Yes, we are, Mr. Mayor. And we have.
Righto. Planning Authority 3. So we've got some people to talk, speak on Planning Authority 3.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. We've got a number of developer representatives and people zooming in, but they're not talking. Right. The first representative talking is Mr. Peter Seaman.
Okay, can we start that process then, please?
My name is Peter Seaman, 49. I've been a lot of time. I'm here to object to the proposal to build houses. However, after speaking to a couple of gentlemen outside in the square, I'm quite happy with the council proposals. And I'm leaving now to my letter that I sent to the council. That's my case on that letter. Hopefully they could reach the right way to go to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it's Deborah Beans will be the next representative speaking.
It's not a very also different things. 15% of us, is that what you're saying? Yeah. As I'm referring to Waffle, I have written something to show that. So the covenant for casino lives is fairly prescriptive and provides residents to conform to particular restrictions around buildings, interior chairs, carports, storage chairs, and fencing. All with the intent of maintaining a spacious, open environment in which to live. I'm keen to preserve this feeling of spaciousness in the place where I live. For years, since I moved into my house in the 80s, spaciousness in the open field of my residence has been eroded gradually. paddocks with grazing cows have been replaced with mini roofs opposite my house. Also, the erection of unsightly power lines, but necessary power lines. Spoil the view that I've once enjoyed in an opposite direction. The proposed development behind the house will mean I no longer have regular visits from the native birds and animals that I've come to impress about. This includes ringtail and rushtail possums, sugar gliders, and includes quality mums and joys, echidnas, penguins, etc., who come to my yard to drink from the water containers that I put out. We also have quite a few snakes, so I guess one advantage of if the proposal goes ahead is that hopefully those snakes will go to somewhere else. I hope that in the development process, these animals have the opportunity to relocate themselves to somewhere else appropriate. And I know there is the one that we've seen close by, so I hope that will always remain. Lately, my backyard has become a relatively peaceful refuge from the increasing noise pollution of the large number of trucks that seem to be using the Sino rice. I've never noticed so many before, but actually often don't garden in the front garden anymore because they're so loud. Whilst I'm not advanced progress, I would ask that future development minimise any detrimental impact that building the mines in the world's residents, including my own, might unintentionally breed. So please consider offering larger blocks directly behind casino rice to maintain the viewing spaciousness. Please avoid the erection of viewing blocks in townhouses. So between my house and my neighbour's house next door, I think there are only 5 houses that share a boundary with our 2 blocks on the interim plan. I would also like to draw attention to an issue I have with severe flooding on my property during heavy rainfall. Please consider diverting away from my property when you're planning the drainage for the new development. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. No one else, Jim?
No, that's it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, Planning Authority 3, Country Club. Would somebody like to move?
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, yes. Sorry, yes. Sorry, Joe, I just remembered you had an amendment to make. I'm sorry. Please.
Sorry to have to interrupt and just ask if I could make a small adjustment to recommendation number 2. It's just come to my attention that there's a slight inconsistency with my recommendations in the table that may confuse the Tasmanian Planning Commission. The only modification I am recommending is just a very slight adjustment to the configuration of the public open space in response to the submission made by the developers, but that hasn't been picked up. So on the screen now, highlighted at the end of recommendation 2. I would just like to add, apart from an adjustment to public open space, just to clarify things for the TPC.
Thanks, Joe. I just had to change screens to see that, so bear with me. Okay. Somebody like to move? the Planning Authority 3.
So moved.
Councillor King, seconder please.
Kelly.
Councillor Kelly, thank you. Councillor King is the mover of the motion. Anything?
Thank you. Once again, I think our contract staff is to be commended for the time and effort that goes into these bigger projects. And I'd like to thank the developer for their foresight and looking at investing in our municipality. And I just want to make note of the value of communication. These people have been very patient, spent quite some time in the foyer. And it seems when conversations are struck up and communication happens, then issues can be resolved. So I thought that was quite noteworthy and would advocate that if people have issues, then to have a conversation, because it often results in a positive and beneficially a mutually beneficial outcome. So that's about it for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor King. Councillor Kelly, anything to add? No? Okay. Any discussion or questions, councillors?
I've got a question, if I may.
Councillor Sinfield.
I have had part of my questions removed by the fact that I was going to ask about the very matter that we've now amended. But my other question was on page 204. It talks about including a 1.52 hectare area of public open space over the central ridge line, and that doesn't it's a 44 hectare site. That doesn't represent 5% in terms of our normal structure, is either 5% or a cash contribution. Is there the facility? The question is, there the facility to have a combination of both, or if we take an amount, even though it's not 5%, we've done our dash in terms of some other arrangement?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I think there is the ability to have a combination of both. It is less than the 5%, it's still a very substantial area. One of the reasons I'm not recommending that we have a bet each way is that this particular proposal and the owner of the balanced land is also making their land available for public access up into the bushland reserve. It didn't sit comfortably with me to recommend. Given that it is still a substantive and really good quality piece of public open space that we're taking, very workable, with plenty of space and will do the job, it didn't seem appropriate to me to get the developer up twice and the landowner up twice when they are also making additional private but publicly accessible open space available. We made the decision as a council that we did not want that land to provide that. That was initially offered for various reasons, long-term maintenance obligations and liabilities. But it's clear that it is going to be made available to the public, so it offsets the difference between the land we're not taking and the land we are. So that's just my view. Technically, yes, you could. It just doesn't sit well with me ethically given these particular circumstances.
Thank you. My second question goes to, I don't even know how to broach this one now, given the representation from Mr. Seaman and that he's had his own discussions with the developer or proponent or someone, and he's more happy, but I'm not. One of the concerns for me is certainly the 18 lots that are proposed along Casino Drive. I was one of the reasons why I haven't supported this, even though I think it's a great, fantastic overall project. And I'm not quite sure how or in what way he's now, I know we can kind of do a discussion, but maybe our plans are privy to why he might be more
happy now in terms of backing on the casino or fronting on the looking across at the casino in terms of those lots, if I understood what he was saying correctly. I'm not quite sure how to deal with that or know what might have changed or my question, I'd like some info on that that might satisfy me in terms of that issue.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm not aware of what the nature of those conversations were. My previous conversation with Mr. Seaman and other actual residents as well of the Shetland Green area. That they value the amenity of the outlook across Country Club Avenue to the golf course and did not. Two concerns. One is that Cheltenham Green, which has established trees and pathways to it, would be cleared and used for a roundabout. As I mentioned to Council on the workshop, Council can commit that that's just not going to happen, going to allow it to happen. All traffic responses need to happen without the need to that. And we know from the other mechanisms, that we're looking at for traffic treatment in the area, so it's not going to be necessary in the long term, even though it was suggested by one traffic. So we can maintain that to give the local residents around Shelton Green some confidence that that is going to stay as it is and the amenity that means with that. The street trees are similar. Along Country Club Avenue, we have really good, mature street trees along Country Club Avenue opposite the Cheltenham Green area that provide a good degree of visual amenity to that street. Again, we can commit that they are stuck, and any subdivision design must be designed around those, and that's very doable as well. The one thing that I think that is not appropriate is to make a judgment that the golf course must stay as a golf course, we're talking about somebody else's land, to provide for amenity to third parties. Any landowner has the right to make an application for a change of land use on the basis of their own circumstances. It's about whether or not it fits the strategic objectives that council has adopted and stated for that area. We have no stated clear objectives that the golf course is to maintain, be retained as a golf course in perpetuity for all time, irrespective of the values and the amenity values that the local residents may place on that. When you look at the environment, we're talking about a good part of modern residential environment along Country Club Avenue. Even though the strip might look a little bit weird on paper, in reality, it continues the visual appearance of those frontages. It just stretches it in front of an area that is used to looking at the golf course. Whilst I understand the visual amenity values that that may hold, I don't consider that there is sufficient justification to warrant refusing an aspect of the proposal, given the environment enjoying it. There is still going to be plenty of amenity, street side amenity, in that area with the balanced golf course and also our street trees and the existing visual environment of Country Club Avenue. So we can make some clear commitments, and I've got that in our report, and we can make sure that that doesn't happen. It doesn't need to be embedded in the amendment because it's our land. We can just simply make that statement and give local residents some comfort that we can maintain those visual values on our land. And our land does make a significant contribution, I think, in terms of the amenity of that area, the Cheltenham Green industry.
Thank you. Councillors, any other questions? No. Statements? For or against of the motion? Councillor Sinfield.
Comment, but I'm not sure if Councillor Knox got a question. My comment, and as I say, I'm still unclear as to what the change that was referred to by the representative. As I say, I think it's a great overall use of that land, fantastic. But let's get it right in configuration. For me, one of the things I go back to is the fact that after consultation, as I understand it, the casino changed their initial plans such that anyone who backed onto the golf course wouldn't have their view changed. And I struggle to understand how somebody who is simply separated by a street, whose view out the front is such that it is now, is going to have that, no matter whether we've got street trees or not, the view is going to change dramatically. So for me, if you have any other comments, I'll be voting against this recommendation on that basis, essentially. As I say, I think it's fantastic, but I'd just like us to be tweaked in the sense that you have good outcomes or great outcomes already. And I just think that drive in when you get past the house and look left, there's some other things in the overall concept that I would tweaked as well, but for me that's a fairly significant one. And I understand the issue about people who can't be back onto open space and having that change, but as our senior strategic planner has said, that there is, developers have the right to do with their land in no small measure what they want, but there are limits on that in mind.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, certainly, I know the comments that were made originally, those who are landowners on Casino Rise who had an outlook on the golf course. I'm very pleased to find that view would not be included. No, council seems to be not sure whether Mr. Seaman has been ameliorated or not, but partly, I guess, in that sense. Certainly, those councils give us a discussion and comment in that. I do think it's a positive that the Cheltenham Green, Cheltenham Way, part of the Club Avenue. It's not going to be about. I'm sure the decision there at that point. It's important. I can understand where Cynthia was coming from as far as those who had a view from the northern side of Country Club Avenue looking over towards the golf course over the road. If those trees. Numbers of them are not going to be removed from the development around them. That's a plus. I guess it might vary a little bit from what Councillor Cynthia's comments, but landowners can adjust and manipulate their land at different times. I think there's been a number of concessions at the moment, good negotiations from what was originally proposed, particularly those in Casino Rise, golf years have been a couple of houses or units out there, and they would have lost, they may have had a house right up to their back. So I can see that. So I think overall, it's a really sound quality development, and I think that it, on those, is about minor. Which, if you like, overall, I see the positives and negatives of this appeal.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other councillors? No discussion, no comments, no fors, no against. Okay, back to Councillor Kelly as the seconder of the motion. Thank you. Councillor King as the mover of the motion.
No, thank you.
Nothing to add. Okay, I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please raise your hands and say aye.
Yep, all
by. Thank you. All those against, it's Councillor Sinfield and Temple against. Thank you. Motion passed.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to acknowledge, I guess, the planner's efforts throughout the three applications, but in particular, Jarvis coming on her, interrupted her leave to attend today. So thank you for that, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. That's two of us that have done that. That's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I'm scrolling through the agenda to get the next item, so excuse me. Is it correct that we're moving out of planning authority and moving just onto normal agenda item development? Hang on. Gone too far.
234.
Just got it. Development and Regulatory Services 1.
I moved.
Oh, hang on. I wasn't watching. So who moved?
Me. I seconded.
Councillor Kelly, Councillor King, good thing we've got you guys sitting there today. Well, nothing would have got moved so far. Okay, Councillor Kelly is the mover of the motion. Any discussion?
No, none from me.
Councillor King?
No, thank you.
Discussion, councillors? I take that as none. No statements for or against? Oh, okay. Sorry, Councillor Sinfield, I missed that.
I read somewhere that you're required to let the local government division know if you change a plan, policy, or whatever. So I thought we ought to let them know.
Okay. I'm sure we will. Okay, put the motion in. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, that looks like it's unanimous to me from here. Okay, Councillor Kelly moves to Development and Regulatory Services 2. Councillor Kelly, seconder.
Oh,
hey. Okay, King, thank you. Any comment, Councillor Kelly?
I might just say total cap eradication program, but I guess this is one step in the right direction. Not a huge cap, I'm one of those that pick up on that, but it is a little bit of a start in the right direction. However, I'll just say to go a little bit deeper.
Thanks, Councillor Kelly. Councillor King, any comment?
Yes, thanks. So I think that any effort to manage introduced species and return feral is a good thing. While the cat management plan is aimed at more responsible cat ownership, it will go some way to dealing with our feral cat problem.
Thanks, Councillor King. Councillors, Councillor Sinfield.
I was going to somehow line it up. I thought that Councillor King would make a mention of the deer, but I suppose we should use the shotgun.
Oh, that's what we said about rabbits sometimes.
Oh,
that's it. Okay.
There is one point. It's extremely minor. Draft Northern Regional Cat Management Strategy.
Where?
2:30.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else, councillors? No? No comments, no statements. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please raise your hand and say aye. Against? That's unanimous. Thank you. Bear with me while I scroll. Oh, too far. Corporate services one, are we up to? Just checking.
Yes.
Yes.
Good. Somebody like to move? Somebody like to second?
Oh, why both? So moved.
King. Thanks, Councillor King. Second up. Councillor Kelly. Thank you. Councillor King, any comment?
I'd just like to thank Jonathan and Justin and anybody else involved in preparing the reports. Good job.
Thank you. Councillor Kelly.
No problem.
Thank you. Councillors, any other discussion, comments? No fours or against the motion before I put the motion? Okay, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye and raise your hands.
Aye.
Unanimous.
Thank you. Against? That's unanimous again. Thank you. Governance 2, community grants and sponsorship fund application. Looking for somebody to move. Oh, did I go too far, did I?
285.
What was the page again?
285.
Oh, got it. Sorry. Vandalism reduction policy. Okay. Would we like to move?
No. Review of budgets for the capital works program.
Uh-huh.
285.
Righto. Infrastructure 1.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry about that. Okay. Somebody like to move? Somebody like to second?
Come, Mick, let's do it.
2-1. Kelly and King. Any discussion, Kelly? No, Councillor Kelly? No. No, Councillor King?
No, thank you.
Any discussion from councillors? Have we still got Dino there or is he gone?
He's gone. No, he thought it was a lady in the museum that's left.
Okay. Any other discussion or questions?
Aye.
Statements, comments? None. Right, put the motion. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Unanimous. Thank you.
Now we
have 291. Now governance one. I'm on it. So, somebody like to move, somebody like to second. Councillor Knott, are you asking a question or are you moving?
It's a very important question because I don't want to involve Launceston City Council in, with Meander Valley. Thank you. I think we mean Prospect Vale in the third paragraph, not Prospect.
Yes.
You do. Otherwise, we'll be part of Launceston Council.
In background, you're absolutely right, Councillor.
If I may insert, before you move the motion, you need to change part one, because it's not a vandalism reduction policy, it's a vandalism reduction incentive, and it happens in the policy, and the problem with that is, in one sense, number one, gets rid of what number two does. So the word needs to change to reflect what the existing policy.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, if I can just respond to that.
Yes.
So the original policy number 21 was called Vandalism Reduction Incentive. There is a different title. That's a typographical error in the recommendation that should say incentive. The new policy is titled Vandalism Reduction Policy. It's not really an amendment so much
as No, it's not an amendment. But what I'm saying is somebody can't move the motion as it's council word.
You might note on the screen, I was just noticing that that had been a layover and I was making that amendment. So if councillors would be comfortable with an amended recommendation that we discontinue policy 21 as it was and endorse the new policy with the new title and new terms, that's my recommendation. Councillors, I'm content with that.
Thank you. Is somebody going to move that? Yeah, Jack.
So moved.
Thanks, Councillor King. Seconder.
I'll second
it. Oh.
Thanks, Councillor Sheriff. Hooray.
He's going to get a T-shirt.
Yeah. Any discussions, any comments, any questions? Councillor Sinfield.
No, I think Councillor King.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Councillor King is the mover.
Just going to say thanks, Jack. Rewriting it.
Councillor Sheriff as the seconder. Councillor Sinfield, you are going to ask a question?
Yes, a couple of things. We have a definition of a person identified as having engaged in an act of vandalism and called them an offender. I would have thought a person who commits vandalism was a vandal. and so I thought that was
similar as well, though.
And then I'm not really, I only got to look at this really late last night, so I didn't have an opportunity to do any, we never got through item two in the workshop and the other thing. You've said the definition of vandalism is behaviour, including graffiti. Vandalism is simply a statement of something that's occurred, that's damaged the property. But if you insisted on leaving it as is, you then, in the objective, say effectively, this objective of this policy is to strategically protect council's assets from unlawful behaviour. In other words, behaviour is included in the definition of vandalism. You don't repeat it in the sentence that you're using the definition for it. You know, if you define something and you're using the term, then you just call it from unlawful vandalism, full stop. And it says in the objective it will reduce the considerable cost. We don't actually know whether that's true or not, but we hope it was, would. So I would think you would use the intent is to reduce the considerable cost, minor things. And again, down the bottom, policy 3, after preliminary investigations and taking into account the seriousness of the vandalism of the behaviour, I think would be and then on the next page, the second dot point, if you want to call it that, it then again refers to a vandalism offender. It's much simpler English to say identification of a vandal. And then on the page 296, again the term vandalism behaviour.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I don't take any particular issue that not presented to me as questions. If the councillor would like to move the changes to be made, that obviously there's mechanisms for that. But I don't identify
a question for me to respond to. Well, the question is, are those terms in fact correct? And would it be simpler and more correct? I did that deliberately because Councillor White once gave me a badge saying I'm more erudite than the bit.
Well, I think the properest approach.
Properest. We'll give you a good mail.
And that is packaged in the way that I've drafted this, is to use, as far as possible, plain English that can be readily understood by the reader as they progress through the document. So that's the goal. I don't think the average reader would read a definition and then reread something as a duplicate of the word behaviour. I think as a matter of plain English reading, as a matter of convention, that's the standard I'll normally apply. So if you seek response, that's mine.
And through you, Mr. Mayor, if I can just add, just in relation to the term offender, it sits with the Offences Act and Criminal Code that's quoted, and the offering of a reward, I'd be looking as a focus point, the prospect of conviction and proven offence, as opposed to a allegation of behaviour.
Thanks, Chair. Any other questions, councillors? Comments? Statements?
Just to add, Mr. Mayor, I was going to call you Lord Mayor, just out of habit, but I don't have any disagreement with taking out behaviours referenced in the objective that Councillor Sinfield phrased, and just having the word vandalism.
Thanks, Chair. Deputy Mayor.
I just have a curious question, and obviously through you to Matthew. I haven't really seen any figures of what our vandalism costs are on average for years. No doubt that toilets and things, toilet torch, I think.
Yeah, twice last.
So,
Matthew.
3 years to me, this council, I think, twice last year, toilets still run. That's probably the most significant level of vandalism we've had in recent years. It's generally your tags and odd broken, glass and notice boards being smashed, those types of things around the place. So we do have an activity for vandalism, so we can track the expense, but I couldn't take it offhand what's average out over recent years.
Councillor Kelly.
Just a further question to that. Was anyone brought to account to the
fires or charge? Through you, Mr. Mayor. So, in relation to the fires at the Deloraine Train Park toilets, yes, there was a youth who pleaded guilty to both offences. Because he was a youth, he went through a program which was as a deterrent, and there were some community orders that were applied through that process, and then COVID came about, and he was undertaking some other educational programs as a deterrent, or as a training, which offset some of his community orders. So, in actual fact, the community benefit that the council received in relation to his offence unfortunately ended up being nil. We commenced the program with community corrections about trying to get some work done in the community by the youth, but because of the circumstances of the unfolding, unfortunately, that didn't occur.
Question, what age did you...
I think at the time that he was 16 years of age, so he's obviously a youth. Yeah.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor.
Are you frozen, Mr.
Chair? Oh, sorry.
No. Here we are.
I'm going. I'm right.
You're back now.
Yep. Any other questions, councillors? No. Councillor Sheriff is the seconder. Any comment? Councillor King is the mover. No. Okay, put the vote, please. All those in favour, please say aye. Right. Raise your hands.
All of us, Councillor Sinfield.
Right, against? Infield. Right, moving on. Governance 2.
So moved.
In. So moved, Councillor. Hang on, I'm not ready. Councillor King. Seconder.
I'll second it.
Councillor Sheriff, Councillor King is the mover.
Happy to be involved with the community grants program and would urge all councillors and staff to encourage progressive submit their applications because they're not got a huge amount of applications to scrutinise in this round. So it's a good program. Get into it.
Good. Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Sheriff, as a seconder.
Nothing further to
add. Thank you. Discussions, councillors. Questions, comments, statements. Councillor Sinfield.
Yeah, just the really impact on anything, and I think the right approach has been taken about these dry stone walls. The first question was, it says west of the place, is that west of the place or east of the place? On page 302, the stone wall.
Yeah,
no, it says 6,000 mil and 26 square foot place. Same reference. And on that, as I say, you've got a slated for the decision. So following that up, but is there any thought on, it says external government to say it needs to be in the street. Have we got any refinement in the policy that might go to that point as a general principle of what people might apply for?
John Harmy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't believe the policy goes to that detail, Councillor. However, the applicant has been contacted to ask how they believe that they demonstrate that the criteria. So we start still at this point in
time. Oh, anything else, councillors? Councillor Kelly.
I'm a garlic and tomato vegetable one, and just one, what was that, Tic Tacs or breath air compression things? Two green, what's that?
Two green.
So, three used to be, the general manager received an application for a cover grant, similar to we have a number of smaller events. Councillor Kelly, so we have one at the end, which is a concert. We had at Hazelbrook at an event that we supported, and Smart Festival was similar to that, and that we were encouraging people to get out following the COVID event. The committee put forward an application to council in order for us to support them in getting their event off the ground and making sure that they comply with the additional compliance that COVID's brought on for them. So that's why that grant was
supported. Yeah. Do you have anything specific that have went for to go for, like,
Can I just add to a little bit of that, Councillor Kelly? I went and opened that event on behalf of council. The organisers were very happy with the input of council staff, from Nate through to Matthew and others. One of the best councils I've worked with, and this is from John Harris, who works down in Hobart on promoting, and well over 2,000 people attended. So we actually got recognised numerous times on the day for the contribution that council put in to make the event happen.
So just to answer, so through
John Harmy,
to answer your question, Councillor Kelly. So with some of these items, we fund a specific thing, like we might fund a band or a certain component. Whereas I don't believe this application, and Councillor King might correct me, but I don't believe this application has specific items that were funded. But things like guest presenter and the fact that the organising committee had projected it to operate at a loss. So. And our contribution just fund to offset that and try and make it like profitable.
Yes.
I attempted the afternoon, and certainly they indicated to me, different stallholders, that you'd opened it in the morning. There were lots of, I think about there, was there about 2 o'clock, probably lots of cars, some of them. Gaps that fairly closely went to the main gate. Very successful event. I think there were lots of stalls and demonstrations and so on. And I think they were very pleasing for Leanne Valley's contribution. And the it was very well attended by the general public, internet cars, whatever. So I think it was very successful. Maybe delighted with or pleased that the contribution in relation to COVID recovery.
Thanks, Councillor. Now the discussion, councillors.
Yes. Do we have any information? I mean, I know it's over time, and there's nothing wrong with it, but we have some repeat business, so to speak, and Beverly Hall, et cetera, and send up fairly regularly. Do we have any sort of collation of dollars and information regarding people over, you know, say, decades? How broadly, I guess, my question is, how broadly is the money getting spread around in terms of new people?
John?
So, thanks, Mayor. There isn't anything on the agenda, Mayor Councillor. I don't think that's that. It's something that the RATS can do considerably. Look at past grants that the applicants have received, so it forms part of our consideration. There's a limitation in the council's guidelines around limiting the applications that a group can make, and that's sort of one per project per round. So I guess that's a small limitation, but it's quite rare that an applicant is into applications in a random way. So yes, the committee do consider that in their assessment. And I guess, as Councillor King has indicated, given we are undersubscribed of our overall program for this year, hasn't proven to be a problem for us in the last 12 months.
Thanks, John.
All right. There's an item there about the Carrick Racing Club. I guess there might be the time available to me. There might be some other comments. I can't see one. As to, was that the entirety of what they were after? Or it says cancer free reimbursement. Is that essentially discussing it and paying for it and whatnot? But,
so, through Mr. Mann, we may require a little bit more explanation, councillors. So, this application was for reimbursement of regulatory fees, development application fees associated with a building works that the club is looking to do. They submitted an application for their building works, I think it was in the September round. So, it would have been in the September quarter. And they asked council to contribute those costs as a regulatory fee refund, which we did, to the amount of $670. They subsequently, at a point in time, after that, they threw that application. I've chosen to proceed with that because they wanted to change their application and submit a different building design, submitted a new application. So they then submitted a request to the grants committee for regulatory fee refund for the full amount. Yes, you know, deliberations as the committee, we considered that given we had already contributed the large on value to that same building project, it was appropriate for our fee reimbursement recommendation for this particular quarter to be less than that that's already been paid for what we consider to be the same project.
We're good. No, I'm not drinking beer, Tanya. I thought about it. Moving on. Any other discussions on that? Well, I'll put that to the vote then. Also, those in favour of the grants committee, please say aye and raise your hand. That's unanimous. All those against? Well, that's unanimous, I think. Thank you. So, somebody like to move, somebody like to second that council close the meeting to the public and discuss the following items. Councillor Kelly, Councillor King, all those in favour, please say aye. Raise your hands. Against? Carried. Thank you.